Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's August 2nd, 2008. I'm Harley Schlanger. I will be your host. The month of August has often been a decisive month in history. Most famous, of course, is the Guns of August, the military mobilizations which led to World War I. As August is the peak of summer in the Northern Hemisphere, it's a month where people try to forget or ignore reality in the vain hope of finding a little peace. But as most people know, you can't really run away from reality. And the economic reports keep rolling in, confirming Lyndon LaRouche's economic forecast of July 2007 that we have already seen a collapse of the banking system. It's systemic and it's escalating. Just yesterday, the month began with the report from General Motors, which was once the bellwether company of the United States, so much so that it was once said that as General Motors goes, so goes the nation. Well, yesterday, General Motors announced a $15 billion loss in the second quarter, and that it may, in fact, have to go into bankruptcy protection. And this was 1 week after Ford Motor Company announced a loss of more than $8 billion. As far as the banking system, this last week, Lyndon LaRouche denounced Treasury Secretary Paulson's plan to bail out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac as offering a remedy worse than the disease. LaRouche said it won't work, and Paulson knows it. It's nothing other than a hyperinflationary decision that will destroy the dollar and what's left of the U.S. physical economy. It was also revealed just yesterday that the FDIC, the government agency that insures the banking system, has not only 90 banks on its watch list, but actually 1,400 that are either in serious or critical shape. And then there's another note on the employment situation. Even the government figures are showing a little bit more reality. Their official rate is 5.7%. But then they report that 14 million Americans are unemployed, not counting those who have given up looking for work. And that's actually over a 10% rate. So even the government figures, if you really do the math, show that over 10% of Americans are unemployed. Then on top of all this, it was announced this week that the United States will have a budget deficit for this year of nearly $500 billion. You've really got to hand it to poor President Bush. At least he'll leave office with one accomplishment. No one in the history of the world has run up such large deficits and left such a debt on the people of his nation. So while Bush says, who cares what history says, I'll be gone, he'll be remembered in history as the greatest debt creator in world history. Now today what we're going to be looking at is what this financial meltdown means for state governments and how this crisis will affect and hurt everyone on the local level. There are more than 30 states now running serious deficits, with the largest shortfalls being California, which has a $15.2 billion deficit, a budget already 30 days overdue, and no compromise in sight. And secondly, New York State, whose Governor Patterson declared it to be in a depression as far as state government is concerned. Joining me to discuss this aspect of the systemic disintegration of the U.S. economy is Mary Jane Freeman, who's been keeping tabs on this accelerating collapse. I will discuss the California situation, as I've just written an article for the Executive Intelligence Review, which is posted on the LaRouche PAC website, and it's on Arnold Schwarzenegger's fascist solution. And we may even have a special guest joining us sometime soon to discuss this. So, Mary Jane, welcome to the program.
Hi, Harley. Thanks.
Well, let's begin with an overview, because I know you've been covering this and following it, and you've been writing on the situation. How many states are facing deficits, and why does Mr. LaRouche say there's no prospect for improvement for these states?
Well, I guess I would first say to our listeners, don't get sick, and don't drive over one of those deficient bridges, because we're not going to fund any of those things in our state and local governments. We have 31 states already, as of the end of June, that said they had over $40 billion in revenue shortfalls projected for their new fiscal year, and that began July 1. And as you've just mentioned, California is one of those states that didn't quite get that new budget ready to go on July 1st. So you have a whole different set of problems that are facing the state and local governments there. You have, at this point, the $40 billion, I would say, is really an understatement, because that $40 billion at the end of June did not include California's deficit, Illinois' deficit, Michigan's soon-to-be-announced deficit, and North Carolina's deficit. So you've got four other states, two of which are huge with respect to the size of revenues that are collected, in trouble. So I would estimate that we're now looking at the first month, the end of the first month, July just finished, of the end of the first month of most states' fiscal year, and they're already talking about $40 billion. I would say it's closer to $75 billion in shortfalls of revenues.
Now, Mary Jane, virtually all of these states have in their constitutions that they cannot run deficits. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's all by constitution or by law, but either one, it's either in the constitution or a law that was written largely during the 80s, which required, or in the 90s, when the Newt Gingrich neocons took over and said, we've got to have balanced budgets. And by law now, most states must have a balanced budget. So what does that do? That puts the legislator and the governor in a situation where they can blame it on the law for why they have to cut off your arms, your legs, shut down your hospitals, not fix your bridges, and create a situation which is absolutely untenable and un-American from a standpoint that we have a commitment in our Declaration of Independence that we will protect the general welfare and the future posterity. Well, if you don't build your bridges, you're not going to have any future, because you won't have an economy that can get from one place to another.
Well, we've also seen the on the hard infrastructure side, we've seen the problem with levees and dams, some of which is federal, but also there's a big state component.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And we see it with hospitals. And we see as well, on the soft side, police and fire protection, schools. So when they talk about cutting, and in California, for example, the Democrats are saying they won't accept any further cuts. So they want tax increases.
Right.
And the Republicans are refusing tax increases and saying it has to be budget cuts. Is that pretty much the picture everywhere?
Oh, yes. And I'll give you a quote in a minute here from Governor Patterson of New York when he made his announcement this week. But just to back up one second on the magnitude of the cuts, one thing to remember is that when July 1st started, fiscal year 08 finished. And already, and I had written an article in EIR in November, which said, we are already at 20 some billion dollars of shortfalls. I forget the exact number, but we're at that level of shortfall back then. So what happened from November to the end of June was that many, many states already began cutting in the magnitude of billions of dollars. So they had to cut their budgets, as you were just saying, because of this balanced budget law in most states.
I can give you one example from California, which is when we say there's a $15.2 billion deficit for 2008-2009 for mm-hmm. California. In fact, it was much higher, but they did make cuts, as you were just saying, right, between January and June.
Exactly.
And one of the cuts they made was, starting July 1st, a 10% cut in the state contribution to the Medi-Cal
right.
insurance fund.
Mm-hmm.
Which means doctors who treat uninsured patients will have their reimbursement cut by 10% from what is already an inadequate reimbursement. And a large number of doctors are opting out of the system, meaning poor people with no insurance cannot have Medi-Cal cover doctors for them.
Exactly. And I believe also there's a component of cutting the hospital portion as well. Yes. Which means that you're going to start to see hospitals close. In that vein, for example, in Illinois, Governor Baglovich, I think that's how you say it, he axed $1.4 billion in social service programs. So there are all kinds of horror stories in Illinois today about, you know, this clinic, that social service program, where people are just being turned away or the office is closed and people are left out on the street. Florida, they cut $332 million from their education budget. And across the country, 10 states that I know of, I don't know exactly each one of them right now, I didn't get the list, but 10 states have cut their Medicaid program, similar to what you just described with Medi-Cal in California. So that, and then they have these things, these funny things called rainy day funds.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do to keep our sinking ship afloat is to try to fill that hole in the bottom of our boat by going to our rainy day fund and draining the funds out of the rainy day fund, put it into the boat, and watch it go down the bottom. It's really nuts.
The rainy day funds are basically from previous years when they had surpluses.
Right, and the previous years are only a few, two or three or four, because let's just step back. If you think about what LaRouche has said time and again, you cannot have an economy that is based on a bubble, whether it's a stock market bubble, an IT bubble, or now the housing bubble. You have an economy that is, and this is the conundrum that these legislators are in. They're operating in a box, and so they say either cut or tax, cut or tax. Well, that's nuts, because reality is you need to put people back to work. You've got to create and generate a tax base from which a state or a local government can get the revenues necessary to provide these services. And, you know, we're not just talking about the, quote, social service safety net. We're talking about your policemen, your firemen. You want to not have a fireman on call when your house is the one that's burning?
Well, yeah. this is the way things are standing at this point. This is right. The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, August 2nd. We're talking with Mary Jane Freeman from the Executive Intelligence Review, who specializes in looking at state budgets. Let me just make a couple of points about California, then I want you to talk about New York. I mean, what the governor did on Thursday, with all the pomp and circumstance of his office and what someone described as an unending gubernatorial performance art as being governor, he signed an order that reduces 200,000 state employees to federal minimum wage. These are people making between $14 and $25 an hour who have years of service in the state. As of the time he signed the order, they're supposed to be reduced to $6.65 an hour. He also, that order included 10,300 jobs that were terminated. And those jobs include food inspectors. And so the subhead of an article could be Salmonella 1, People of California Nothing.
Right.
Now, Schwarzenegger furthermore said that this is not to put pressure on the legislature, but we've got to get a budget done soon. Now, at the same time, to cut $15.2 billion from the budget, one of the things that was discussed is maybe 40,000 teachers laid off. The shutting down of parks, the shutting down of funds that go to emergency rooms from the state, several hundred thousand children of poor families who require state insurance, children with chronic medical problems, who will be cut off and be assigned to a scrap heap. So Governor Schwarzenegger is living up to the characterization that we've had of him since the day he stepped into office as George Shultz's fascist golem, who's imposing, using monetary and fiscal policies to kill off so-called useless eaters. And as I said, there's an article that's posted up on LaRouchePack.com under the breaking news that I wrote that gives more details on that. Mary Jane, what's the situation in New York State right now?
Well, on Monday, Governor Patterson of New York, accompanied by Mayor Michael otherwise wanting to be Mussolini, Bloomberg went to the Financial Control Board offices, which is otherwise affectionately known in New York as Big Mac, which was known in the 1970s for its shutdown of hospitals, fire stations, police stations, massive layoffs across the city.
And the Big Mac still exists?
It still exists. It was supposed to go out of existence this year, but has not yet, and may now not go out of existence. And the person who ran that, you know, axe cutting across the city was Felix Rohatyn, the same thug who has today, you know, destroyed the any hope of an FDR commitment in the Democratic Party. So in New York, what happened is that Patterson said, look, we have, this is in the context of what you started out with, Harley, that we have banks that have shut down, taken over by the FDIC. Wall Street firms have been announcing over the last number of months billions and billions of losses from their thievery. And so what happened is New York, Patterson announced that there is a now $6.4 billion deficit, which is up $1.4 billion since May. New York is one of those states that has a fiscal year that goes from April to May. And so this is his three-month report of his new fiscal year, and in that period of time, that it increased that large. And what that meant was, he said, Wall Street's 16 largest banks had a fall in the revenue that they pay to the state for operating as a business in the state from $173 million a year ago to $5 million this year, just from 16 Wall Street banks.
Well, New York's Elliot Spitzer took the easy way out.
Yeah, right. That's right. And Wall Street provides the state of New York one-fifth or 20% of its revenue to function as a state government.
So what with companies like Merrill Lynch writing down $8 billion and one after another, Lehman right. Brothers, Bear Stearns going out of existence, that's not just pension funds that are losing money and investors losing money,
no.
But that's now revenue that's not going to be there for the state government.
Exactly. So what Patterson did is he's going to hold a emergency economic session of the legislature on August 19th. Right now, he's going to be announcing a hiring freeze, has announced a hiring freeze. He will cut state agencies across the board with no caveats, every agency, 7%. This is between now and August 19th. This, he says, will save $600 million. So the question people have to ask, well, how many people does it kill or put in jeopardy? Because you're talking about closing clinic programs. You're talking about, you know, hospitals that are like in California, where you're not going to get the money for the Medicaid program. It's going to be across the board. And what does he say? He says exactly what Arnie says, quote, we've got to wake up New York to the possibility we're all going to feel some pain. And the sooner we recognize it, the sooner we can recover from it, end quote. So already two of the Democrats, one the assembly leader and the other the Senate leader, have said, well, I don't want any more cuts in health care or education. And the immediate reaction of Patterson was, well, everybody's run, same thing as you got in California, everybody wants to protect their favorite program. Since when is public safety, police and fire, or health care, or education a favorite program? These are essential programs. What do you want to do? Have your kids grow up to be baboons?
Well, we could later in the program then talk about the remedy that's proposed by Bloomberg and Schwarzenegger and others, which is turn it all over to the private sector.
Well, that's
private police.
That's another aspect of what Patterson announced. He will seek public-private acquisition or monetization of state assets. Now, it's not just talking about the toll roads and bridges kind of stuff that you've seen Bloomberg and Schwarzenegger and Rendell yakking about. He's literally
Schwarzenegger is going to lease out the lottery.
Right, right. And in this case, Patterson's literally talking about selling buildings, you know, physical. Now, I don't know how much more
let me just mention to the listeners that if you have questions for Mary Jane or for the program, you can send them in via email at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio at larouchepub, LaroucheHePub.com. And that I would encourage you also to go to the LaRouchePack.com website, which has the latest from Lyndon LaRouche on Paulson and Bernanke's insanity. It also has the 1923 firewall video, which discusses how the policies that we saw voted up last week in the Congress by Barney Frank and others, how this will lead to a Weimar-style hyperinflation. Plus, we also have the new DVD up there, the new video, 1932. Now, I want to mention also, as you did, that there's some opposition in New York. In California, in reaction to Schwarzenegger's efforts to lay off employees, he did fire them. They're already gone. But to cut almost 200,000 state workers to the minimum wage, the controller of the state of California, Chang, announced that he will not reduce the paychecks, that right. He will continue to pay people at their existing levels because he said there's enough cash to make it through September. This is not necessary, and he's not going to do it. Schwarzenegger said he is going to file a suit to force him to do it. And we just got a question in email from the Central Coast of California, from James Rose. He asks, how do these government cuts affect the rest of the California economy? I'll say something on that, and then Mary Jane, you can say something more broadly
exactly.
on that.
Exactly. I have something.
What happens, you look at the foreclosure crisis. Now, just on a simple thing, you take 200,000 people who are paying mortgages, paying car loans. What happens when their income suddenly goes from $60,000 a year to $12,000, $14,000 a year? Presumably, Schwarzenegger says the budget crisis will be resolved, but there's no sign of that yet. But then you add to these other questions. When you disinvest in infrastructure, or let's put it the other way, when you invest in infrastructure, you increase the overall efficiency of the economy. When you don't invest in infrastructure, minimally, you're having a worsening effect on overall commerce and industry and activity. But then you have a greater potential for breakdowns, whether it's the bridge that fell in Minneapolis or the levees in New Orleans or the breakdown of the whole flood control system in the upper Mississippi basin. And all of these states face problems like that. So clearly, and then you add to when you start cutting Medicaid and Medicare, then you have more people who are not being treated, who will become part of a breeding pool of disease, and they'll all congregate in emergency rooms. And so you have the potential for a real biological holocaust in this. Mary Jane, why don't you add your thoughts?
New York State is, I mean, a perfect example. The immediate reaction of upstate New York was one of these people who runs the bridge program for the state of New York. Now, the state of New York has, you know, everybody since 1 year ago when the Minneapolis bridge fell, have seen these horrible figures about how many structurally deficient bridges we have. Well, New York State has over 2,000 of these. Hmm. In upstate New York, there's four counties where they want to replace 61 major bridge spans. That will cost $116 million, not very much money. But if you get a 7% across-the-board spending cut to the whole state program, now, you know, they're not going to have that $116 million. They might get $2 million or, you know, $3 million to do those bridges. So what are they going to do? You're going to delay those bridges. And that's why I said, you know, don't get sick, don't drive across a bridge when you've got this kind of situation. And the other side of that, which is the solution side, I just wanted to, actually, I told Harley earlier, there's an incredibly poignant quote from LaRouche. This was a March 21st, 2001 webcast when he was asked at that time about what do you do when you're faced with this. I think it was by a state legislator. And Lynn said, quote, "You put the public infrastructure project into effect in order to stimulate that local state economy. In that way, you're able to pull things together and get the state through it," end quote. In other words, if you use an FDR-type Reconstruction Finance Corporation to direct credit into the infrastructure building, and this is statistics from, excuse me, Public Transportation Committee, unions, they put out a press release this week which said public transportation authorities have documented over 3,000 highway projects worth $18 billion that could be started in 90 days. Mass transit industry, they have a similar list, and that's $3.6 billion.
And ready? That could then affect the auto sector as well, because you could be transforming the auto sector to produce some of the vehicles for mass transit.
And this doesn't even include what you would do to rebuild the rail. And now there was a legislation, although it has a lot of flaws, this introduced this past week by Durbin to finally get a high-speed project seriously going in the United States. It has a lot of flaws, so I wouldn't want to promote the bill itself. But the concept, which LaRouche has said for years, why do we not have electrified rail across this country? It's crazy. And right now, you talk a stimulus check, you're going to get $600 in the mail, and that's somehow that was supposed to stimulate the economy so you could go out and buy more from Walmart? Well, wait a minute.
Well, and to go back to the question from Mr. Rose, the obvious point that you just presented is that the approach that Mr. LaRouche takes, the FDR approach of major infrastructure, and not just, you know, the states are limited to what they can do, but each of these states has senators in Washington. They have congressmen. They can be mobilizing for a national FDR-style infrastructure policy, which will benefit the nation and the states. Instead, when you start cutting, you're going in the opposite direction, and you're not only losing the potential, but you're having a devolution, a collapse downward. Now, I was just informed that we have a special caller on our VIP line who wishes to take exception with some of the things we're saying about California. Governor Schwarzenegger, are you there?
Hi, how you doing, Holly? I just wanted to say, I wanted to make clear, my budget cut proposals, whatever doesn't kill people will make them stronger, and if they do die, then they are weak anyway.
Well, Governor, I'm surprised and happy that you took some time out of your busy schedule jet skiing up in the Sierra Nevadas to join our program. As you've probably heard, we've had some harsh words for you. How do you respond to the charges that you're carrying out a Mussolini-style, Hitler-style reduction of the population to save the bankrupt banks?
Well, look, I was forced to do it. Call it what you will, you know. Call it Mussolini, whatever. I don't care. I have to do this. This is my job. I was put into this situation because there was, you know, these Democrats and these Republicans. They keep whining. They whine all the time and say that, we can't cut this, we can't cut that. They haven't even discussed a budget yet. So, you know, I am forced to starve the beast. It has to be done. We can't afford to keep feeding the beast. And
Governor, calm down. By the beast, you're calling government the beast, is that right?
Well, you know, I mean, everybody knows that that's the case. I mean, the government steals your money. Look, taxes. I made a proposal when I first started governorship that I would get the 75 cents on the dollar. I'm still going to go for that 75 cents.
Well, it looks like you're delivering about 6 cents on the dollar, Governor.
Well, you know, I mean, people don't deserve it anyway. You know, I think they are real people anyway. The real people are the upper 20%.
Well, somebody told me you have a stimulus plan. Would you like to share that with us?
Well, you know, it's very uncomfortable, but it's very good for the population. It's very good for me. It's very good for my wife. It's good for my children to actually have this to stimulate people. It's very good because people need to be stimulated. I was stimulated. You know, I've been stimulated my whole life. So
we're not talking about your sex life, Governor. We're talking about the economy.
Well, the economy, you know, it's the same thing. My sex life, the economy, it's the same. You know, when I'm cutting the budget, it's like I'm calming.
Governor, this is a family show. Ask you if you have any words for Controller John Chang, who has said that he's going to defy your wishes and continue to pay out the full payroll to the state employees.
Well, I tell them, bring it on. I will wipe the floor with John Chang. he has nothing on me. You know, I am the decider in this situation. You know, I'll tell John Chang that no pain, no gain.
You know,
that's what I learned from bodybuilding. If you don't have pain, you won't get any muscle.
Uh-huh. Well, for our listeners, you probably realize that is not actually Governor Schwarzenegger. It's the LaRouche Youth Movement member in Los Angeles, Alan Agray. And Alan has become somewhat famous for dressing up as Governor Schwarzenegger. I have to admit, Alan doesn't quite have the biceps and quads and other muscles. Alan has not been popping steroids for most of his life either. But what we've discovered is that you have to provoke people to wake them up. And Alan, tell us a little bit about the kind of thing you do with the Schwarzenegger imitation to get people to laugh at themselves and how silly they are by believing this guy is actually qualified to be a governor.
Well, the idea of it, we've been doing this since, you know, for 4 years now, three or 4 years, something like that. And it's really had a major effect on the popularity of Schwarzenegger. And we've been going to campuses, and we've been to a few conventions of the Democratic Party. Just really the effect of it is people are mostly afraid of Schwarzenegger because they think he's, you know, or they think he's the celebrity of Schwarzenegger himself is so powerful that, you know, you can never beat it. But when we do these street theater, or we go out and, you know, dress up as Schwarzenegger in a tutu, it really paints a picture that in the minds of the population that this guy is not all that, you know, all that he's been made up to be in the movie.
Alan, are you saying that Arnie is the real girly man?
Well, he's got big enough breasts.
You know, I'd like to make an ironical point about this because
sure.
Schwarzenegger, you know, he was elected, what, in October 03? Was that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was this special election because former Governor Gray Davis was hounded out. Do you know what the size of the budget was in deficit in 2001, 2002? $4.2 billion in California, which is nothing for a state which has a multi-hundred billion dollar budget. So,
well, not only that, but a year ago, in last August, when Schwarzenegger signed the 2008 budget, he said this budget compromise, which included significant cuts, will ensure that in the future we will never again run these deficits.
Right.
So if someone goes back and quotes him and shows that when he came into office, you're exactly right, Mary Jane, he said that this is because the Democrats don't have the guts, the Republicans, there's a comfortable country club culture in Sacramento, and he's going to change it. He's going to blow up the boxes. And actually what he's done is, as Lyndon LaRouche said, he's made the crisis much, much worse.
Right. He's decided that he's going to dig the hole and put the people in it. That's what austerity and fascism is about. You know, there's one other aspect of this, which I wrote about earlier this week, which I think our listeners should know about. You've got As of yesterday, we had the eighth bank in the United States taken over by the FDIC. This was a Florida bank. It wasn't very large, a couple hundred million dollars in its portfolio. So that's the eighth bank already this year. IndyMac, of course, was the big one. But states whose or cities or school boards who have their funds deposited in these banks, you know how the big FDIC PR campaign, your first $100,000 are insured?
Yeah.
Those are not insured. If you're the individuals are insured, but the state government or the school board's money is not insured. And this was the feature in a Columbus, Ohio Dispatch article this past week about giving stories about how local school board officials have moved their money, split it across different banks across the entire United States just to protect the little bits of money that they have to try and run their school boards or their state government.
But of course, that can't really work for state governments because the amount of money that has to pass through these bank accounts is so large that you couldn't exactly take California's budget and put it in $6,500, $100,000 CDs.
Right. Well, but that's in fact what these smaller communities are doing. And
yeah,
that's really quite astounding. So,
Alan, let me just ask you, when you take up this Schwarzenegger persona and go around at conventions and things of that sort, I've actually seen where there are people who end up arguing with you as though you're actually the governor.
Yeah.
But don't they feel a little silly?
I don't know. Maybe they're in some fantasy of their own. I don't know. Maybe they just have, I don't know. It is kind of strange when they because they're maybe enraged at Schwarzenegger so much that they think it is the real Schwarzenegger.
But do you find that you get people to start reflecting on these questions of how steroid-popping bodybuilder, Hollywood, almost comic book figure could be presiding over the biggest state economy in the country?
Mm-hmm. When we were at the California Democratic State Convention, we had some city council members like Janice Hahn of LA City Council. It was funny because it created the conditions by which he was more organized to set up a discussion or a meeting with us than if we were to go to the council itself, because it really does pose the question: what, you know, it takes them out of their element. It takes them out of what is normal to them. They're not really prepared for that. So it changes the way they think about politics.
Well, and this is an important point Mr. LaRouche has been making, which is that when you think back, Mary Jane, to what we've been discussing so far, this is kind of hard to grasp for someone who's trying to cover their credit card bills, their mortgage, their home, their children's tuition, you know, to think about, you know, having to come up with a couple hundred extra dollars for utility bills, it's almost too big a burden. And then you start to think about what it means when you're talking about 60 million or 100 million cut from this program. Schwarzenegger, when he first came in, held back a $4 billion promised raise to teachers. And that meant that teachers had to go 2 years without a pay hike, even though there was inflation. So it's somewhat difficult, I think, for people to grasp the magnitude of what we're talking about.
Oh, it's okay, Harley. George Bush just gave us a $600 check. We got a stimulus package. Oh, we don't want to talk about Arnie.
Yeah, and then we were told that that's why we have a bigger deficit.
Yeah, this is the thing that LaRouche has said time and again. I mean, and you know, when you're a state legislator, you're sitting there and you're saying, well, how, and he said this to one legislator who asked him a question at a webcast in 2001 or 2003. I know that you guys know how to balance the books. I know that you guys can do it. That's not your problem. Your problem is you've got to figure out how to create an economy that can function. And as the questioner that came in earlier, you want to have look, California is the largest economy of the United States in terms of a state. It's the seventh largest economy in the world. You can't be in a situation where you don't have functioning infrastructure to facilitate the movement of the economy whether it's people getting to work on a transit system or on a road, which you can't get through for 3 hours because of the congestion. You have a situation in this country where things are coming to a standstill. If you've got power plants that haven't been built for 20 years, if you've got, you know, rail systems that were literally since the 1970s, since the days of Richard Nixon taking the dollar off gold, literally the physical infrastructure of the rail system in the United States has been taken down. And so you've got huge backup right now on the few freight rail companies that do still exist. They're fully congested, and everybody's complaining that they can't run their passenger rail on the freight rail because there are huge delays. That's right. That's why you've got to have separate tracks for the two. And that would create tens of thousands of jobs in each state just to begin to build that. When you do that, you put, instead of giving somebody a $600 stimulus check in their pocket to maybe pay one of their medical bills, then you've created the situation where somebody is employed, they have a regular income, they can finance, you know, their healthcare needs, their home needs, the state has a revenue that it can tax, that it can provide the services that it's supposed to. I mean, just from the states, they get 37% of their revenues from income taxes. They get 34% from sales. Well, when you have a foreclosure crisis throwing millions of people into a situation where they're no longer buying things, that 34% goes out the window because they're not out buying. Well, that's 71 right there. Those two components for states is 71% of their revenues.
When Schwarzenegger says we don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem, he's ignoring the fact that the increased revenues from the last couple of years were almost entirely from the bubble.
Right.
The housing bubble generated enormous amounts of revenue,
right,
because of people getting equity loans, using their homes to borrow money, and then building fancy swimming pools and jacuzzis and everything else, which they now are, you know, they're sitting there rotting. So this is as was pointed out earlier, there's an interconnection between every aspect of the economy, and that even Greenspan came out yesterday, and I cite him more for ironic purposes than for authority, but Greenspan said there's no bottom in sight. And of course, he's the one who previously saw nothing but blue skies. So, Alan, let me ask you, are you finding in California, I know Schwarzenegger a year ago, his popularity was 64%. Today it's under 40%. If you go out with this Schwarzenegger routine, do you find more and more people saying, yeah, that's right, the guy's an idiot?
Yeah, especially in places like Santa Monica. We definitely have to do more, but some of the stuff, when people see, now, I mean, before, when he said it's 66%, yeah, people were just wouldn't have the same reaction as they do now, in terms of like when we would go out and go out as a flabby Schwarzenegger, people would have a certain, they'd laugh a little bit, but then they wouldn't they wouldn't really get it. Now it's really really clear to people that this is, especially the students today, because their tuition also has been cut. And
the tuition has gone up and the loans have been cut.
Oh yeah,
the
student loans have been cut. Sorry, the tuition has gone up and the loans. Okay, the students have been organizing against that. But it is this question that there is a certain more understanding that Schwarzenegger isn't the Hulk that he's made up to be. He's a Hulk and idiot.
This raises exactly what LaRouche just discussed in his July 22nd webcast, when he was asked by, a very courageous lady, Barbara Lett Simmons, about her fear that we'd be in a situation that we will have blood in the streets. And Lynn said, yeah, we have that potential. And that raises the question of the leadership. Where is, as you put in your article, Harley, where is the Democratic Party? And where is the leadership necessary to say, we're going to change the agenda? We're going to put back on the table the commitment to build this nation for a future. And, you know, when you're talking about cutting hundreds of millions of dollars from education programs, it wasn't just rhetoric to say we want our children to be baboons. Well, why don't we want our children to be scientists and engineers and, you know, conquer the outer space and do all those things which, in fact, a good education program system would do, which, of course, the LIM, the LaRusso Youth Organizers, have a mastery of.
Well, I would say just also in response to that, from talking to Mr. LaRusso the last few days, we're actually seeing a movement coalesce, initially around Senator Clinton's campaign, where after the first couple of months of a false start, largely due to sabotage from the inside from Mark Penn, Senator Clinton started going with a LaRouche FDR-style economic push, talking about invisible Americans, exactly what we're talking about, the people who are left out.
Right.
And she proposed a moratorium on foreclosures. It wasn't quite the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act, but it was a step in that direction. But what's happened is we've seen the beginnings of a movement, which is figuring out that there was something completely fraudulent about the Democratic nominating process, that a candidate who's not capable of serving as president, not just because he's not experienced, but because he lacks the intellectual capacity, was promoted as a kind of hand grenade against Senator Clinton. And we're seeing with the various groups that have sprung up in support of Hillary Clinton's nomination that haven't accepted the idea that it's over, that what they're fighting for is not just Senator Clinton, but they're fighting for a return to FDR policies. Now, we brought up earlier the public-private partnerships, and I'd like to come back to that because James Rose has sent in a follow-up question. I'd like to remind our listeners, you're listening to The LaRusso Show, this program will be archived. So if you have friends or neighbors or coworkers that you'd like to hear it, they can find this show and any of our past programs on the LaRouchePub.com website. They go to the left-hand side. You'll see something that says The LaRusso Show, and you click on that, and you can pick this up from the archive. So you can do that with any of our previous programs as well. Now, James Rose asked the question, so why don't people like Schwarzenegger and Bush support and push infrastructure development? So, Mary Jane, how do you answer that?
Well, they do. They only, but the problem is that they don't. The way they want to do it is the Mussolini style, as Harley was saying earlier. Public-private partnerships. If you turn every state transportation department in the country today has been brainwashed time and again for the last 15 years that they have to come up with new ways to finance. And particularly in the 7 years of the Bush administration, they've been told that the PPPs or P3s, however you want to call it, that that's your only solution because there's not going to be any money from the federal government because, you know, we're going to go the Halliburton route. We're going to make our buddies rich. You know, the same kind of war profiteering that Dick Cheney and Bush have pursued in their, you know, illegitimate war in Iraq. Well, there was an article just a day or two ago in the USA Today, which is ironically how toll roads across the countries are now starting to experience huge revenue fall-offs because people aren't driving, because the cost of fuel is too high, because they've gone to transit systems. Anything to get off the road and pay for the gas, you know, gasoline in their tanks. So much for the public-private partnership approach of Bush, Schwarzenegger, Rendell, Felix Rohatyn, who is the guy who literally, whose signature is on the paper, and EIR published it. Felix Rohatyn is the guy who wrote the manual for how to take down the auto industry in the country. And as LaRouche repeatedly said, take the most advanced skilled workforce in the world, these machine toolists, and retool those auto industries and have them start building the components for national infrastructure projects, rail lines, waterways, you name it. We could do it. And these guys knew they could do it. And instead, what they've been handed is a ticket, you know, either to China or to the unemployment office.
Well, I'd like to make clear one other aspect of why these PPPs or private-public partnerships can be legitimately called Mussolini-style programs. Mm-hmm. Because on the one hand, the argument for them, which is what Rendell and Bloomberg especially and Roatan puts forward, is that the days of FDR are over. We've outlived the era of big government. This was Al Gore also with his reinventing government, that we have to have a smaller government and the government can't go into debt. Well, the fact is there is one government that can go into debt, and that's the federal government. These people don't seem to mind going into debt when it's to bail out bankers and bail out the bad investments made, the quadrillions of dollars of toxic waste and mortgage-backed securities and collateralized debt obligations and so on. But you also have the ability with our Constitution to go into debt for programs such as the TVA, such as the Hoover Dam, such as NASA, programs that will stimulate advanced research, development of new technologies, and job creation to do necessary work, so that it's not a net loss in the economy. It actually generates an increase overall to the productive value of the economy. So it fulfills the problem or the question posed by Alexander Hamilton on debt, where he said never go into debt without the means to extinguish it, that real infrastructure funded by government and government-established authorities can solve that. Now, how does the private sector make money on infrastructure? Well, they're going to do shoddy jobs. They're going to pay the people who do the upkeep and the management almost nothing. And they're going to try to reduce the wages of the people who build the infrastructure as much as possible, as we saw Cheney try to do in the so-called rebuilding of New Orleans when he tried to repeal the Davis-Bacon Act, which said that contract labor that are hired by private contractors like Halliburton have to be paid the union minimum, and they tried to break that. And so what we see with Schwarzenegger reducing people to minimum wage, even though he says it's a short-term program, this is the policy. You've got to save money so these private companies can make money so they'll reinvest. And so Roatan and Bloomberg and others are planning to make large amounts of money by controlling the infrastructure, as LaRouche said, as a feudal League of Cities type approach, where people won't be able to get in and out of outside the cities they live in. And in the meantime, the alternative is so simple, and it works so well with FDR.
And it poses the question of what is the future for our youth.
Exactly. And Alan, I'd like to ask you, because I know you work on campuses a lot, what's the mood? I know it's the summer and you don't have large numbers of people on campuses, but are you beginning to get a sense that young people are saying, whoa, wait a second, what's going on here? Are they getting out of their Facebook and MySpace enough to realize that their parents can't afford to send them to school anymore?
Yeah, when you get their attention span to go beyond 40 seconds, you can actually start to discuss the collapse of the economy, because a lot of them really realize that the food prices are going up, they can't afford to go to school, things like this, and it's really shocking them. So they're the DVD that we put out, this 32 DVD is really having a dramatic effect in the way they think about what our organization does.
Well, we just started getting those out in the field. Are you finding that people are grabbing them up and wanting to look at it?
Yeah, we made these huge movie posters. So when people come up to the table, they think it's like, because we were set up yesterday in Long Beach at a table site, and people we had the posters big. And it was near a movie theater, and people were coming to our table and asking, "Is this a movie that's coming out of the theater right now?"
No, we went straight to DVD.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah.
Well, Mary Jane, I will remind you, this is Hollywood out here.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So you have to play the part, I guess. But it's funny because people are coming up to the table, and genuinely, the young people are being more mobilized to know what's going, what their history is, and they're responding at a greater rate than previously. And, you know,
well, Alan, we may have some more work for you because I was talking with Nick Walsh, the one of the directors of the 1932 video, about actually making a shorter video on Schwarzenegger and his fascist economic policies. And so you'll have to dust off your tutu and your mask because I think you'll probably be taking advantage of your skills. Now, we have about 5 minutes left, and you know, I'd like to bring this back to the real heart of this question, which is that with state governments disintegrating, with the federal government not able to live up to its obligations, we truly are heading into something unknown, but something quite horrible if we don't reverse this, aren't we, Mary Jane?
Yeah, LaRouche described it in his July 22nd webcast of you're sitting in the boat with your friends, and the hole's there, and you all start getting your buckets, and you start trying to get that water out as fast as you can, and all of a sudden you realize that the hole is bigger than the bottom of the boat.
Well, then you realize the bucket has no bottom.
Right, neither one. Look, our legislators are in a bind because they choose not to get out from underneath the controlled choices that they've been given. You want to balance the budget, there is a way to do it. You have to go back to these tax revenue generating programs, and they don't have to pick. I have this quote from a state legislator in New York. She says, well, gee, I don't want to see the seniors impacted, but gee, I don't want education impacted either, but you know, we've got to share the pain across the board. And I mean, I think she really doesn't want to see kids not go to school. She doesn't.
But they're really trapped by their axioms, aren't they?
Exactly.
That there's no, and what I found in writing this article in California is that, and talking to legislators, because I do talk to legislators,
right,
and they all say, well, we have no effect on national policy. Well, how the hell are you going to solve the problem locally if the U.S. dollar is turned into toilet paper? So the idea that they have no ability to move the situation in Washington, especially in an election year, just shows the extent to which they've accepted the trap where one way or another they're going to vote to authorize Schwarzenegger's plan to kill people.
Right, right. They don't have to choose between the lesser of two evils. There is an American system way to get out of this mess. They should adopt it. This is why I ended that November EIR article on the budget crisis. LaRouche put the policy forward in July of 2005 on the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. LaRouche put forward in 2006 the Emergency Reconstruction Act. These are policies which are on the table in 140 state legislators or city councils across this country. There is absolutely no reason for this genocide to go on.
And it comes down to courage, sort of the kind of courage it takes to put on a tutu and a mask and go around sounding like an Austrian fascist, huh, Alan?
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of balls to do that, because you're out there. I mean, like, you really have to really be out there and to really move these people, because it does physically actually now. So, because people have to start to snap out of the fantasy of the free trade market.
Well, as Lyndon LaRouche said in response to hearing that John Chang, the controller of California, was not going to go along with Schwarzenegger, he issued a statement where he said, good, it's time to fight. It's time to wake up. Sometimes it takes an injustice like this fascist nonsense from Schwarzenegger to get people moving. But now is the time to move. Mary Jane, do you think there'll be some reaction from the people of New York, or are they going to be as laid back as the Californians?
The people of New York, yes. The legislators of New York, I doubt it.
So the people have to have their voices heard in Albany, then.
They need to join the LaRouche movement fight to put these alternatives on and demand these alternatives from their elected officials. That's what being a citizen means in this country.
Well, and as Lynn said at his last webcast, you fight for policy, you fight on issues, and that will force, as we build a movement around that, that will force candidates to step up to
right.
take on those responsibilities. So don't wait for a candidate or an elected official to do it. Get on our website, get on our mailing list, call in, contribute money. We're going to flood the country with DVDs, with pamphlets from LaRouche's webcast, and that's the only way this nation will survive. Mary Jane, thank you very much at short notice for coming on today.
Sure, not
a problem.
Thanks, Harley.
And Alan, thank you, and I'll be seeing you shortly in the streets, either in Santa Monica, Long Beach, or Yorba Linda, bringing some levity. Okay, Alan. So this has been the LaRouche Show for August 2nd, 2008. We'll see you next Saturday and every Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern.